Missouri School of Journalism. Welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. North Korea's human rights record is among the worst in the world, but women in North Korea face particular challenges. North Korea is a patriarchal society, and men have long been seen as the heads of household and the chief decision makers for the family. Now, that dynamic has changed some since the famine in North Korea in the 1990s that forced many more women into the workforce. Now, there aren't great statistics on North Korean society, especially about things like women's issues, but a recent Human Rights Watch report said that domestic violence, sexual harassment, and sexual assault are rarely punished in North Korea. North Korean women also seem more likely to flee the country than men. By one aid agency's estimate, about 70% of the refugees or defectors arriving from North Korea into Northeast China are women. Now, on this edition of Global Journalist, a look at women's rights in North Korea. In a few minutes, we're going to hear from a group of panelists who have been tracking this issue closely. But first, we're joined by Jinye Jo. She's originally from North Korea, and in the years during and after the famine, she fled to China a number of times and was forcibly sent back to North Korea on four separate occasions. She came to the U.S. a decade ago with the help of an American missionary. She's the founder of the group North Korean Refugees in the USA, and she joins us now from Georgia. Jinye, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Well, your story of leaving North Korea is remarkable. I know you've told it a number of times, but just briefly, tell us what happened to your family in the years after the Great Famine.
Yeah, I was have nine family, but my father, because he tried to save my siblings in traveling to the China and looking for food, but the North Korean was sent him to prison, and in prison got tortured and got hunger, and he passed away in prison. And my grandma also, 76 years old, she passed away because of the starving, and my two brothers are starving to death, and my sister was sent in the China sex trafficking ring. So we didn't see her almost 20 years. And right now we survived with my mom and my sister. We live in the America. So in North Korea, when I was first time run away from North Korea, it's 10 years old. And I stayed in the China for 10 years, but we sent back to the North Korea four times.
So over a period of 10 years, you were sent back to China four times, and you were living there with your sister and your mother, that's correct?
Yeah, every time when we sent back to North Korea, we was all together. But my mom and I was four times, and my sister was three times.
And it's really a remarkable story, your story of leaving North Korea and what happened to your family. But tell us, if you would, about what the role of women is like in North Korean society. As we mentioned in the introduction, there's been a lot of reporting that women have become the main wage earners, the main people providing for their families.
Yeah, because the North Korean government asked the men to have to work for free, don't have any payments from the government, and they have to work. If they don't work, they send them to the camp or in the prison for start 1 month to 6 months, or if two times or three times they didn't go work, then it would be year or few years they have to stay in the prison. So the men have to go work for the Kim Jong-un regime, and only way is the woman have to make food for the family. That's how the old women go out to the market or going to the China looking for food, or they stole something, or they have to do something for their family.
And so what you're saying then is that because the men are forced to work in government jobs, the women go out and sell things in markets, the sort of black market or gray market economy, or go to China to look for work. But tell us, if you would, are they allowed to play an active role in the army? Can they work for the government in North Korea? Are the same opportunities available to them there?
Like 80% men, if their family history is clear, it's not that bad history, then they have to go to military 100%. Or they really sick, they have something, a problem, they cannot working, or they cannot walking well, then they cannot go to the military. But for women, I think only 10% can go into the military, or they look so beautiful, or they have a special reason to go military, or they want to, and their family history is clear, then they can go to the military. And normally the woman is not allowed to the military.
And so tell us, if you would, I understand that in Northeast China, where there are thousands of North Korean refugees, defectors, women are actually sold as brides. You mentioned that your sister was trafficked sexually. What are conditions like there for women in these border areas?
So in the North Korea, the brothers or fathers, they're working for the government and they working hard, but they are not enough to find food for the family. So the woman's last choice is going to China, making some money and food to bring to the family. That's how they cross the border. But in China, the few bad people, already 20 years the North Korean defector cross the border. So they use them to make money and survive themselves. So I cannot say 100% women, but almost 70% women, when they crossed, the people tried to sell them to in China. Like the man cannot marry, or they sick, or they're really poor, they don't have money to marry normally, and they will buy the woman from the broker. So the most North Korean defector we sold to sex traffic, and then some of women, they survived again and come to the South Korea or America. But still right now, a lot of women in the China, they hiding in somewhere or sold into the religious side. And all the women, before they leave North Korea, they know will happen this kind, but even they know they will sold to somewhere, but they can make some money to the family. That's how they still cross the border.
So in other words, a lot of women make this voyage knowing that they may be sold as brides, they may be trafficked sexually, but they know that they'll be able to feed their families back in North Korea by doing so.
Yes, yes.
Well, what do you think people in America may not know about North Korea and North Korean women that they should know?
I don't think so. A lot of Americans, when I say I come from North Korea, they was surprised. And many people, they think I'm the same as Kim Jong-il or Kim Jong-un regime. So when I meet with them, I have to explain to them like 10 minutes to 15 minutes. And they say, oh, okay, that's amazing, great. That's their answer. So lots of Americans, they don't know about the North Korea issue and North Korean women.
Well, talk to us about when women make it from North Korea to Northeast China. As we mentioned, it sounds like they live, they're very vulnerable in many ways. How do they eventually, what's the most common path for finding a place to a more hospitable country like South Korea or the United States?
Oh, I didn't quite understand your question. I'm sorry.
So let me rephrase it this way. How did you get from North Korea? I understand that you had been sent back to North Korea and were in prison. How did you get from there to the United States?
So first time when I crossed the border, I'm only 10 years old. So I come to with my mother and we sent back North Korea 3 times. And then the last time was 2006. And one of the pastor missionary in the Seattle, Washington, his name is Yun Yohan. He was saved my family. So when I was in North Korea 2005, I would be get killed by government because I was helped rescue the North Korean defector in the China with the pastor, American pastor. Anyway, so he knows when my family sent back North Korea, we will be executed by government. So he found the donation, the money, $10,000 in the USA, and he sent that money to the North Korea. And the underground, they find the few police, and they was looking for money, and they saved my family, let us go out again. So that's how we survived.
So you're essentially ransomed then out of a North Korean prison. Well, it's a remarkable story. Yeah. Jin Yi-Ju, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
A reminder that you're listening to Global Journalist. On today's program, we're talking about the particular challenges for women in North Korea, a country with one of the worst human rights records in the world. We just heard from Jin Yi-Jo of the group North Korean Refugees in the USA. To expand our discussion, we're going to bring in 3 other guests now. Joining us from London is Heather Barr. She's a senior researcher on women's rights for Human Rights Watch. And in Bournemouth, England, is Hyunju Lim. She's a sociologist at the University of Bournemouth who has researched North Korean defectors living in the United Kingdom. And in Seoul, South Korea, is Hyuk-Young Kim. She's a professor of North Korean studies at Yuha Women's University. Welcome to all of you. Heather Barr, let me start with you. I understand that your organization got particularly interested in researching women's issues in North Korea because there was this UN Women's Rights organization committee that North Korea was presenting a large report to on sort of the status of women in the country. What did that say?
Well, this is an interesting moment, actually, because North Korea signed up to CEDAW quite a few years ago, but then for a long period didn't actually submit the reports that are required.
And I'm sorry, CEDAW is this committee that was supposed to review various countries' women's rights issues.
Apologies, I'm speaking UN gibberish. Yeah, it's the Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. So what this committee is responsible for is for monitoring how countries that have signed up for a convention on the elimination of discrimination against women are actually implementing that. So what they're actually doing to ensure that they're complying with international law and that they're working to abolish all discrimination against women within their country. So as I was saying, North Korea signed this convention back about 15, 16 years ago and submitted one initial report as they were required to after they signed the convention, but then for many years didn't comply with the reporting requirements. And now just in the last year or two, they've submitted a report and they've gone and appeared before this committee. So this is an interesting moment. It's a moment of engagement and hopefully an opportunity to actually have a dialogue between the North Korea government and this United Nations committee about this.
And how did the North Koreans assess their performance on this?
Well, they think they're doing great. So their response to the committee was really that there's no gender inequality in North Korea. Everything's going really well and there's full equality. And so the point that we've been trying to make is that while it is very difficult to gather information from North Korea, we have enough information to know that the picture that we're hearing from people who recently escaped and people who are in touch with people who are still in the country is that discrimination, harassment, and sexual violence against women are all very widespread within the country, in addition to the types of abuses that happen to women who've escaped the country that we've heard about a moment ago.
Well, I want to pick up on these issues a little bit more. If I could turn this to you, Hyunju Lim at the University of Bournemouth, tell us just a little bit about what we do know about gender roles inside North Korea. I understand for your research, you spend a lot of time interviewing North Korean refugees in the UK.
Well, I think there has been really a systematic exploitation of women within North Korea and outside North Korea. I mean, already the earlier speaker mentioned about the personal experience and observation in North Korea. But, you know, in North Korea, there is the society is very clearly hierarchical between men and women. So men in the public setting and women are tied to a kind of housewife's role, but in reality, since the famine, women are, you know, forced actually the one who take initiative to make sure the family survives. So, you know, my participants were talking about actually they started to call men as a dog. What it means, basically, men are staying at home, guarding the house, not doing the hands-on work, but women are the one who go out and cross the border in order to make sure the family survives. But what happens was, I mean, as already mentioned about a number of speakers, the women's sexual harassment, domestic violence, all of these issues are really prevalent. And some women mentioned about they bring food and some of the exchange of goods from their, you know, travel outside of North Korea or other cities, and husbands took those items outside home and exchange with the alcohol, and then, you know, beat women and demand women to serve them. So there is a real issue in terms of, you know, women's exploitation of women, but also these issues are really deeply institutionalized in all aspects of the society, but not just within the family, but also my participants.
Let me stop you on that point, because I want to come back to that, and I'd like to turn this now to Seokyeong Kim in Seoul, South Korea. You've also done a lot of research on this issue. I understand that more than 70% of North Korean defectors in China are women. What does the picture look like in South Korea? What do we know about this issue of human trafficking?
Those women who cross the border, the trend, the tide of women's crossing the border between North Korea and China. That started basically end of 1990s, like 1997 or 1998. That's like the end of Great Famine period. If you remember, there was a Great Famine period in the middle of 1990s in North Korea, all over North Korea. And those women at the first part, most of them, they did not know they are going to be sold to a Chinese ruler man. But after some time or period, like, you know, 2005 or so, women in North Korea start to know that they will be sold when they cross the border, but they still cross the border to China because they want to support their family behind in North Korea. So they are going to find broker people by themselves and tell them, please sell me to China and give me some money, and I can give that money to my family in North Korea. So we can divide those women who are sold to China, like in two parts. First part of women, earlier part, they didn't really know that they were going to be sold to Chinese men. But after some period of time, most of North Korean women, they know they are going to be sold once cross the border, but they still are going there to support their family. So it's like related to the general food situation in North Korea.
Well, let me turn this to Heather Barr then, because you raise some good points. And actually, Heather, Human Rights Watch has done a lot of research on this. What are some of the stories that you heard about the women who have crossed into China and then in some cases are actually sent back to North Korea?
Well, one of the interesting things in the report to this committee is that the North Korean government has said that if you're sent back, you don't face any punishment at all. But we've heard reports which say that in some of the prisons that the people we've spoken to have been in.
And I'm sorry, I should stop you. The women are sent back from China because China treats them as sort of illegal migrants in a way then in some cases.
That's right. The Chinese government is not respecting their right to seek asylum and is treating them as undocumented people that are being deported back. And so once women are returned to North Korea, it's clear that a significant number of them are ending up in prisons. And as you know from reading the report that we've issued recently, we've documented some very serious problems with sexual harassment, abuse, and assault sometimes of women in those prison.
A reminder that you're tuned into Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. On today's program, a glimpse at the particular challenges for women inside North Korea. We're joined by Heather Barr of Human Rights Watch, Hyunju Lim of the University of Bournemouth in England, and Seokyung Kim of Yuha Women's University in Seoul. If you're interested in more discussion of undercovered international news and human rights issues, visit us online at globaljournalist.org. There you can find our program archives, as well as Project Exile, our ongoing series of interviews with journalists in exile around the world. You can also like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, check out our videocast on YouTube. Let me turn the discussion to you, Hyunju Lim, then, because another issue that has come up a number of times in reports about women's rights in North Korea is the issue of domestic violence. What do we know about the domestic violence situation in North Korea? Is it more widespread? Is it better or worse than other places?
Well, if I'm honest, I mean, there is no kind of, actual statistics. It's very difficult to actually get official statistics, but based on my interviews with those women who defected from North Korea, domestic violence is prevalent because of the general cultural understanding of, men, women's place, different place in society. you know, men actually beat women, and women have no place to actually complain. Therefore, you know, a couple of my participants talking about enduring this experience for over 20 years, but there is no redress at a societal level. And this kind of, you know, applies to other aspects of society, as I said. And, you know, in the place like a military, then, you know, few women who are considered to be quite privileged position to be able to enter the military, but because of this hierarchical understanding of men and women and different places, they are systematically harassed and raped, but the blames are on women because they are seen as a, you know, misbehaved rather than actually taking actions against these men. So I think the issues around, you know, gender divide and domestic violence and sexual harassment are very serious, and there needs to be much more systematic study needs to be done. But obviously with the current, you know, North Korean government, very kind of secretive and close, it's extremely difficult because they control everything.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's very difficult to get information about what's happening inside North Korea. But I wanted to ask you, Seokyung Kim, about the North Korea's leadership at the elite levels. What do we know about women's participation in the leadership of North Korea? I know that Kim Jong-un's wife, Ri Sol-ju, is often photographed with him in public, as well as his sister. This is a bit unusual, as I understand it. Do we know about how influential women are within the leadership of the country?
Yes, that's very interesting part. If you really, really want to understand North Korea, you have to differentiate official and unofficial side and public side and private side, and on stage side and off stage side. This is very interesting. Like, you know, when you see it on North Korea on television, you can see Ri Sol-ju and also Kim Yo-jong and any other you know, elite type of North Korean woman. But if you go to their daily life, women's status is very low compared to other countries. And I have continuously interviewed with people from North Korea, and they said woman's price, that's what they are saying. The woman's price is about half of man's price. So, you know, whatever woman is doing, the last stage, the final stage, the very important step is depending on men. So that's why in every household, husband, not wife, is going to be the head of its family, and also the.
But let me just stop you there, Seokyung Kim. You say that the husband is still treated as sort of the head of the family, but we've just heard that in many cases, women now are the main breadwinners, are the ones who are earning the money for the family to eat because the men are in state jobs
That's
that basically don't pay anything.
Part.
So hasn't that changed? Right. Hasn't that changed the family structure?
Well, maybe a little bit. You know, you have to differentiate the North Korean history before the Great Famine period. Basically, man is the main provider. Man is going to work, and he is going to get rice once in every 15 days. But after that, after Great Famine period, North Korean government did not pay anything to men. That's why woman is going to do market activity, and she's doing anything to feed her own family. But she's only breadwinner. She's not decision maker. She's not the head of family. As long as a woman is doing something, you know, like manual labor, then her family is going to get something to eat. It doesn't mean then she is controlling his own her own family. It's like, you know,
so even though she's the main wage earner, it doesn't give her necessarily authority over to decide how that money is spent. Well, let me turn this to you, Heather Barr, because we heard Seokyung Kim talking about this issue of women working in the markets. And according to your research, I understand that women are actually, this does give them some opportunities to work in the black market, to sell goods, to sell food, other things. But it also makes them vulnerable to bribery and extortion by the state as well. Tell us some about that.
Bribery, extortion, but also sexual harassment and sexual violence. I mean, one of the things that was really striking to me about our research in North Korea compared to other countries that we've looked at is we actually had to change the way that we were asking people questions because sexual coercion seems to have become so commonplace, such a normal part of the experience of the li in the lives of women who are working in this kind of gray market economy that they wouldn't really even recognize it as being some kind of abuse. You know, if we asked women if they'd been raped, they'd say, no, that never happened to me. But then if we'd say to them, were you ever forced to have sex with someone? They would say, oh yes, of course, that happens to everyone. I mean, I think it's become normalized in a really disturbing way. And it's really kind of part of how this economy is functioning for women.
And this is done over things like getting a better stall or just being able to allowed to continue working in the marketplace or selling your goods or things like that.
I mean, it sounds to us like, you know, to start with, if you refuse sexual coercion, then you face repercussions. If you comply with this type of coercion, then perhaps there's some benefit for you. But it's not that women are deciding to have sex in order to get some kind of benefit necessarily. It's also that if they refuse sex in this kind of circumstance, they could face physical violence, they could face rape, they could face being reported to the authorities, they could face some type of administrative harassment. So they're in a very, very difficult and impossible situation that's really unacceptable and represents a very serious human rights abuse.
And do you see that the North Korean government sees this as a problem and is trying to halt this? Obviously, sexual violence, sexual harassment is a feature of every country on earth.
Yes, it is a feature of every country on earth, and every country on earth needs to do a better job of protecting women. But I don't think we've seen any evidence that the North Korean government is taking this seriously or taking action at the moment to protect women. The report that they submitted to the committee that we discussed earlier essentially just said, there is no problem, go away. So that's not the kind of statement that you hear from a government that actually does recognize that there's a problem and is working to try to solve it. So one of the things we're really calling on the international community to do, including the United Nations, is first of all to keep the pressure on North Korea on a whole range of human rights abuses, including these abuses against women. But second of all, to collect evidence. Because there has to be accountability one day for what's being done to people, men and women, in North Korea. And
Well,
there will be justice someday for people from North Korea.
I'm sorry, we're just about out of time. That's going to have to do it for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Jinye Zhou, Heather Barr, Hyunju Lim, and Seokhyun Kim for joining us. Our assistant producers are Ellen Beaton, Idom Kase, and Raina Sims, with supervising producer Lauren Wertman. Alisa Blyle is visual editor, Aaron Hay is audio engineer, our director is Travis McMillan. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.